for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. This week, the Environmental Protection Agency supported a permit for a West Virginia mountaintop coal mining operation, and the Army Corps of Engineers quickly issued it. The move raised questions about the Obama administration's stance on the controversial operation. Joining us in the studio to talk about this decision, Siobhan Hughes of Dow Jones, The Wall Street Journal, and Tom Hamburger, The Los Angeles Times. Joining us by phone from West Virginia, Joe Lovett. He's executive director of the Appalachian Center for the Economy and the Environment, and Roger Horton. He's founder of Citizens for Coal. Throughout the hour, I'll look forward to hearing your thoughts. Join us by phone, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. And before we begin, let me tell you that we did contact the EPA, invite them to take part in the show. A spokesman said that their work with Hobart Mine resulted in Hobart being able to gather more coal. It resulted in 50% less impact on the streams. The spokesman stressed that the EPA does not have the power to stop the practice of mountaintop mining. The spokesman also expressed annoyance with our covering the subject of mountaintop mining without giving the EPA, whom we contacted yesterday morning, sufficient time to respond. And let me be sure to say to all of our listeners, our subject matters for the next day's show are always decided 24 hours in advance. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning, Dave.
Good morning.
Tom Hamburger, if I could start with you, explain exactly what mountaintop coal mining is so we can see it.
Sure, Diane. Actually, it's quite appropriately named. In mountaintop removal mining, explosives are used to blast away the peak of a mountain to expose coal seams underneath. The coal companies say this is actually an efficient and safer mining practice than traditional mining. Environmentalists say the process scars the landscape and dumps tons of waste, some of it toxic, into streams and valleys. They call it, and some of those on the line I think may have coined this phrase, Appalachian apocalypse, because it not only results in environmental degradation, in their view, but it also changes the landscape dramatically, as you'd imagine would happen if you explode the top of a mountain.
And Siobhan Hughes, you've been covering this growing controversy. What's happened with the Obama administration? Has there been a change of policy?
That's something that a lot of people are struggling to evaluate. The Obama administration came out earlier this year and indicated it was for the first time going to use some of its powers to really scrutinize permits being issued by the Army Corps of Engineers more carefully. But it allowed a number of those permits to go through, which really frustrated environmentalists and created a question in their minds as to the seriousness of the administration's commitment to stop what is felt to be this very abusive practice. From the point of view of companies, the administration is creating a lot of uncertainty and maybe clamping down much too hard, and companies say they can't plan.
Siobhan Hughes, she's a reporter for The Wall Street Journal covering energy and the environment. Tom Hamburger is an investigative reporter who covers the White House and executive branch for The Los Angeles Times. Joe Lovett, I know that your center is working to stop mountaintop coal mining. Were you surprised at this decision by the administration?
Yes, we were surprised and disappointed by the administration's decision to allow this permit to go forward. I think that it's clearly a political decision. This is the only large United Mine Workers strip mining operation left in central Appalachia, and I think that it was a decision by the administration to not tangle with the UMWA.
Roger Horton, your group supports this type of mining. Would you agree it was a political decision?
No, ma'am, I would not. And also, to correct Mr. Lovett, there are other large UMWA represented surface mines. I work at another one. I clearly think that the reason this decision was made was because the Environmental Protection Agency has had the opportunity to meet with Patriot Coal as well as other coal companies to understand what it is that we do. And they have been able to critique and allow us to do things more effectively. We have learned a tremendous amount from the things that we have employed over the years to better modify and to better mitigate any negative environmental impacts that we have had in the past, and are doing a much better job providing this valuable source of energy for the country.
Roger Horton, he's founder of Citizens for Coal. Joe Lovett is executive director of the Appalachian Center for the Economy and the Environment. He's, he's in Lewisburg, West Virginia. Do join us, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Joe Lovett, did environmentalists actually expect the administration to end this practice?
We did, and we still do. We understand that there are miners employed and working currently. We also understand that this coal is currently needed to fuel power plants that are already built. But we expect the administration to start turning off the spigot and stop this practice. The mountaintop removal is a completely unnecessary form of mining. It's the most destructive form of mining, you know, that we have. And it's, in fact, I think it's one of the greatest environmental problems in the United States. It's, as I said, it's unnecessary. I therefore do expect the Obama administration to turn off the spigot and to stop this form of mining.
Tom Hamburger, you've looked at the politics of coal mining. Can any administration afford to stop or control the mining industry? As Joe Lovett says, because it's unnecessary and destructive.
Diane, that's been the view of the environmental movement and activists in Appalachia on the environmental side for some time. However, the reality of the political situation is that coal companies are enormously powerful politically. They give campaign donations to both political parties. And even more important, coal is a dominant influence in the Ohio River Valley, where mountaintop removal mining takes place. The Ohio River Valley, as we all know, is the home of the traditional battleground states of the in U.S. elections: Ohio, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Kentucky. These are the places where elections are won and lost. And because coal companies are so influential there and have been very effective at grassroots organizing and lobbying, both on the national level and on the state level, it's been very difficult for any administration, particularly Democratic administrations like this one, that run with the support of the run and depend on the support of environmentalists, to deal in a tough way with the coal industry. It's politically proven to be, in the past, almost impossible.
Siobhan Hughes, who are the big players here in Washington who are really out there on coal?
Well, the National Mining Association is the industry's trade group, and they're pretty big on the issue. The Arch Coal behind the scenes is another company that wields tremendous influence. They are a company that currently is in its own tangle with the Environmental Protection Agency, which pulled back an already issued permit. Patriot would be another one, and Consol Energy.
You've also got Senator Jay Rockefeller of West Virginia, Robert Byrd. What's happened there?
Senator Rockefeller and Senator Byrd have been influential on this issue. The most powerful player is probably Nick Rahal, who's the chairman of a key House committee and has been working behind the scenes to persuade the EPA to let loose its grip on some of these permits.
But didn't Robert Byrd change his stance?
Last year, Robert Byrd came out with a statement that raised eyebrows that indicated maybe he was having some second thoughts about mountaintop removal mining. It was a stance that caused the governor to have questions. It led him to write a letter to Robert Byrd saying, are you pulling back from your support for mountaintop removal mining? Since then, Byrd has appeared to step back a little bit from that, and earlier this week issued a statement supportive of the EPA for granting the Hobbit mining permit.
So what's going on here? Is there a lot of lobbying at work?
There's a lot of lobbying at work, and it seems to be part of the reason that the EPA has had trouble coming out with one position or another. The politics have seemed to beat the EPA towards the political center.
Siobhan Hughes of the Wall Street Journal, Tom Hamburger of the Los Angeles Times, Roger Horton, he's the founder of Citizens for Coal, and Joe Lovett of the Appalachian Center for the Economy and the Environment. He's in Lewisburg, West Virginia. We'll take a short break when we come back. Your calls and more talk. Talking about mountaintop coal mining, an operation that the proponents say is providing the company, the country, with necessary fuel, and with environmentalists who argue that you're damaging the environment, you're creating water hazards, pollution in the areas where this kind of operation is carried out. I wonder, Joe Lovett, if you would describe what you believe the environmental hazards of mountaintop mining are.
Sure. And the reason I think that the Obama administration will stop this ultimately is because if it can't stop mountaintop removal, what environmental problems can the Obama administration prevent? We've lost in this region in the last 20 years, over 750,000 acres of the most productive and diverse temperate hardwood forests in the world to this mining. Those forests will not grow back. Instead, we're left with degraded grasslands and invasive species, and that's what we're turning our forests into. We've lost nearly 2,000 miles of pristine streams that have been filled by these mines. Those streams are gone forever. In addition to that, the downstream areas are significantly polluted with a host of toxic pollutants. The health of the communities is being impacted. People live shorter periods of time in coal mining areas than they do in the rest of Appalachia, and that's directly attributable to coal mining in those areas, to the dust, the water pollution, and other environmental degradation. And not only that, it's actually hurting the economy of the region. A study from Kentucky has shown that the coal industry actually costs more than it brings into the state of Kentucky. And there are now economic reports and scientific studies showing the impact of this mining on our environment and our economy, and it's really time for it to come to an end.
Roger, let me turn for a moment to Roger Horton. Do you believe there is a way to mine without damaging the environmental issues that you've heard Joe describe?
Absolutely, and we do that every day. As far as the hardwood is concerned, we plant thousands upon thousands of acres of hardwoods and softwoods back during our reclamation process, and we do not pollute, as he has said. You know, the Patriot operation where I work has spent millions of dollars to make sure that that doesn't happen. One of the pollutants that I'm sure has come into question has been selenium. It's kind of odd that in your drinking water, you're allowed 50 parts per billion in order to have adequate drinking water, and we're only allowed to have a discharge of 4 to 5 parts per billion. Well, that's kind of unfair when, in fact, selenium itself in small amounts is not harmful to the environment. We do reclaim the land, and also we develop a large portion of this land for other economic uses, and it can be very valuable for further economic development into the future.
Siobhan Hughes, have you seen these reclamation operations? How do you come out on whether the coal companies are carrying out their promises to bring that land back to where it was?
Well, to take a for instance, one of the things that the coal companies talk about doing is kind of reforming the mountain after it's all torn down. But that doesn't really work because after you have created all of this rubble, you can't really put it all back, and you can't really replace the forests that you have torn down on top of the mountain. So a lot of environmentalists certainly would say it's hard for mitigation to really address the harms you've caused.
And what about water and that kind of concern?
When water is really where the EPA comes in, how do you unbury miles and miles of streams, I think, is the question that would be asked. How do you redress that?
And Tom Hamburger, you too have been following this for a long time. To what extent do you see this reclamation truly possible?
Well, I've taken a look at some of the reclaimed mountaintop sites in West Virginia. It's true, as the caller said a moment ago, that the industry does replant with hardwoods and so on, but the landscape is dramatically changed. It looks less like the steep hollows of West Virginia and more like, maybe from a distance anyway, or a first look, sort of rolling prairie of hilly Nebraska or something like that, the Dakotas. More concerning is the impact on water quality, as you just suggested, groundwater, and wildlife. There is a study, Diane, coming out later today. It's embargoed, but it apparently is going to be quite a dramatic study that looks at both the environmental and the human health effects, cumulatively, of mountaintop removal mining.
And what do we know? This is a paper today that's going to be issued by a group of scientists announcing their findings about the damage that mountaintop coal mining causes. What do we know?
Diane, the study is embargoed, but it is going to appear in the journal Science, which is a prominent scientific journal. It's peer-reviewed. It's by five or so well-known scientists. And what we understand, though we can't talk about the specifics because it's embargoed until 2 o'clock today, the findings are dramatic, and they do deal with the public health and the environmental consequences of mining. The reason this is significant, and some of the authors have already testified on Capitol Hill with concerns about some of the trace elements that have shown up in streams and the environmental cost of those elements showing up in drinking water and in streams. The reason it's important is that the Obama administration has said it's going to make its environmental decisions based on sound science. And here comes one of the premier journals, Science, making a scientific claim about the impact of mountaintop removal mining. This is going to create, could create, depending on what the study says, a dilemma for the Obama administration.
Siobhan, do we have any of the details about what this report might say?
Like Tom, I don't have the details because it's an embargoed report. As a counterpoint to what he said on the Obama administration's promise to put science first, it's also promised to keep coal a part of the fuel mix. And that's creating really a difficult tension for the Obama administration because the coal and the science are a lot of times at odds with each other.
All right, and joining us now is Judy Bonds. Now, Judy is director of the Coal River Mountain Watch. Judy Bonds, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Please tell us about the effect on your hometown in West Virginia regarding mountaintop mining.
Well, my hometown is now gated off, and there is a gate up, and the only way I can go back to my home now is to go visit what's left of the cemeteries there from the strip mining and the irresponsible mining there in here in West Virginia. And my home is not the only home that has been destroyed by strip mining. Lindy Town, Blair, there's a lot of towns that are being destroyed, shut off, and people are very sick. We're being blasted with 3.5 million pounds of explosives a day. And when we, the citizens living here, try to speak out, the coal industry creates fear among its workers, and I have personally been attacked and threatened, as along with several other citizens that is trying to complain about the effects of strip mining here in Appalachia.
Roger Horton, what kind of response would you have for Judy Bonds?
I would hope that no one would do such an horrendous act as far as attack a person individually trying to express their dissatisfaction with something that's taken place in their lives. I can't speak in regards to her particular area. I haven't been there, but I do know that where I work, that we take every precaution necessary to make sure that we do not damage the environment or damage people's homes. We provide employment for a large number of people in our area, good-paying, high-paying jobs, restore the land as best we possibly can. And if someone has an issue, we welcome them to come to us and speak to us about it. We do not promote fear. We promote a dialogue that we hope will be able to allow us to continue mining and allow them to continue living and enjoying the lifestyle that they've always had.
But now you've heard Judy Bond say that her community is now gated off. Why did that happen, Judy Bonds?
Because everyone in my community, I was the last person to leave Marfor Collar because of the excessive dust, the coal dust, the water pollution, and my grandson was beginning to get very sick, very ill from the irresponsible coal mining. The problem here is when they blast the tops of the mountains, the people that live below that have to suffer the effects from the blasting. Their homes are being destroyed, and what you blast up comes back down on the community, so that dust is full of silica, it's coal dust, it's ammonium nitrate, the explosives, and I would also like to, you know, express my views that on October the 13th at an Army Corps engineers meeting, there was several hundred irate coal miners and their wives that prevented us from expressing our First Amendment rights. We are literally afraid to go to meetings now because I don't know what world, you know, that Roger, I don't know why Roger hasn't heard about this, but there is thuggery and threats and intimidation here in West Virginia because we cannot express what the coal industry is doing to us because of the fear and the intimidation. And I wish Roger would talk to his colleagues and ask them to call the dogs off, please.
Judy Bonds, let me ask you, however, about you say that the coal miners and their wives were there at that meeting. Of course, there is the concern about employment. There is the concern about making a living. What do you say to those coal miners who are arguing that you're trying to take away their means of helping their families, taking care of families?
Well, my father was a coal miner, too. He was an underground miner. And let me say that we believe in a just transition, and we will have to transition away from coal. This coal will run out very shortly, the surface mine coal here in West Virginia. And we can, and I fully expect the Obama administration to release abandoned mine lands funds to put these men back to work in reclaiming the land that they've destroyed. And this transition will have to happen sooner or later. But let me also say that jobs that blast and poison people are not good jobs. So it is up to the Obama administration to retrain and retool parts of Appalachia. We deserve that. These men work hard, and all coal miners work hard, and all people work hard. And we have given and given and given in Appalachia to give power to Americans, and it's time for America to give back to Appalachia.
Judy Bonds.
It's time to retrain these people. But we certainly, the people that have to live with these effects, do not deserve to have our homes blasted, and we don't deserve to have our children cower in the corner at 4:20 in the evening or 4:30 in the evening whenever they set off a blast or whenever it rains. You know, there are children that are afraid to go to bed because they're afraid they're going to be flooded out of their homes. You know, we don't deserve for our children or the women living in surface mining areas to have 10 years taken off their life
Judy
because
Bonds.
Of strip mining.
Judy Bonds, she's director of Coal River Mountain Watch, and you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. And it's time to open the phones, 800-433-8850. First, let's go to Columbia, Missouri. Good morning, Rick. You're on the air.
Good morning. Good morning. As I drive around these snow-covered streets here in Missouri on coal cinders, I just was, you know, I was just wondering the amount of jobs lost due to mountaintop removal mining. I mean, it only takes a few people to set off explosives and a few more to run the equipment. And also to the reclamation, I've worked in for lots of years out on the West Coast doing commercial reforestation, and it's just not the same thing. You remove that thin little layer of topsoil that's taken centuries to build up, and you plant some trees, you know, grown in a nursery. It's just not the same forest.
Tom Hamburger, can you comment?
Well, I think the caller makes a good, it raises a good question about the employment impact. Actually, he's correct that mountaintop removal mining, which is so mechanized using these giant dozers, actually employs fewer miners than the traditional deep shaft mines. But while the employment around a specific mine site may be reduced, in fact, there is an understanding, as Judy Bonds acknowledged, I think, in West Virginia, that coal and in other coal states, that coal mining and the use of coal is an hugely important part of the economy, and that a sense that there, if there is a reduction in coal production, a reduction in coal use, it will cost not only mining families but people who work for utilities their jobs.
Hey, Diane, this is Joe Lovett. May
sure.
I jump in here?
Of course.
We think that we're not talking today about stopping coal mining. We're talking about stopping the most abusive form of coal mining, mountaintop mining. Since from 1950 to present, coal mining jobs have fallen in the Appalachian region from about 120,000 to about 17,000 due to mechanization. At the same time, we've moved from deep mining to these big surface mines, so that now almost 40% of the coal produced in the region comes from these strip mines. So as the strip mines have increased, we've seen a drop in employment of about 85%, while coal mining, while the amount of coal miners remained about the same. So So what we need to do, of course, is to make a transition back to more labor-intensive form of mining that will actually employ more people in the region and be less destructive to the environment and to communities. And the statistics show us how to do that. We're not here trying to stop coal mining. We're trying to stop this most abusive form of mining. In terms of the trees that he raised, the caller is exactly right. As Roger Horton said, they plant trees, but those trees don't survive, and they certainly don't thrive. It's not the same. The trees will die after a few years, even though they've been planted. So research is clearly showing now that these trees, that native trees, will not grow on the soils that are left on these big mines.
Tom Hamburger, you want to make a quick comment?
Yeah. In fact, Joe, I wanted to ask you a question because this is something that I have pondered. If the number of employees in mountaintop removal mining has dropped so dramatically, why is it that it evokes such a strong political response?
All right. We'll answer that question when we come back. We're talking about mountaintop coal mining and mountaintop removal. Stay with us.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the Annie E. Casey Foundation, promoting lifelong family connections for children and youth. On the web at aecf.org. By the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, your source for what works in public education. Learn more at edutopia.org. And by the Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide at fordfoundation.org. This is NPR.
Memories of a painful divorce can keep even the most devoted couples from tying the knot again. The best-selling author of Eat, Pray, Love talks about her journey of making peace with marriage. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. And just before the break, Tom Hamburger, the Los Angeles Times, you had a question for Joe Lovett. He's director of the Appalachian Center for the Economy and the Environment.
Thanks, Diane. Joe made an argument with impeccable logic, I thought, that mountaintop removal mining is, in his view, environmentally destructive, and it employs far fewer mine workers than traditional mining. So the question is, why isn't a transition easier? Why is it that in a state like West Virginia, Joe, where you've worked for so long on this issue, that it's still such a potent political issue, one that drives and even determines election results?
Well, I think the coal industry is very powerful in West Virginia, and it makes a lot of money from mountaintop removal. And though it employs very few people, the coal industry wields such power because it makes big political contributions. So the coal industry controls our legislature, and it controls the governor of the state. I'm glad to see Senator Byrd seems to be stepping away from his support to mountaintop removal, even as Senator Rockefeller wades deeper into the mess. The problem is the entrenched coal industry will not let go of this practice because it is so profitable.
And Siobhan Hughes, during the break, you were talking about how important this kind of mining is to the overall economy of West Virginia.
That's right, and maybe this is something Joe could address too, but when I looked into this back in 2008 and talked with the West Virginia folks, they said that the taxes paid generated from coal mining operations accounted for something on the order of 10% of the general budget for the state, and one has to wonder whether that plays some type of role as well.
So if we were to stop the practice of mountaintop mining, do we have any idea what it would mean to the economy of West Virginia and the economy of the cost of energy, Siobhan?
Well, I looked at the data on surface mining operations from Appalachia, and that contributes about 10% of total U.S. coal production. So if you got rid of all surface mining, and now not all of it is mountaintop removal, you would take away a fair amount of the supplies of U.S. coal. What does that do to prices? I'm not entirely sure, but you have to imagine there's some influence.
Is there? Go ahead, Judy.
This is Judy Bonds, and there has been several peer-reviewed researches done, and research shows that the negative health impacts on coalfield communities in Appalachia far outweighs the economic benefits to the region. And I would say that would probably address the nation as well, because basically the health impacts to Appalachia, of course, follow suit in the nation as well. So we do have peer-reviewed research that shows that the negative health impacts far outweighs anything we get from the economy.
All right. Let's take a caller in Akron, Ohio. Good morning, Mary Lynn.
Thanks, Diana. I wanted to talk about we worked for 4 years on our documentary film, Coal Country, and Joe Lovett and Judy Bonds are both in it. But one of the things that really struck me during this four-year process was how the intimidation just continued to increase during that time period.
What kind of intimidation?
Well, we at first, of course, saw the intimidation that was happening to the residents like Judy, who, you know, are forced to protect themselves and have surveillance cameras around their house because there have been so many threats to them. But the first premiere of our film, which is a balanced film, it shows both sides of the issue and the pros and cons of mountaintop removal. 2 days before our premiere, the theater canceled it due to security concerns. When we were able to reschedule it 2 days later at the Capitol, we had to have West Virginia State Police there, some of them in riot gear, to protect, you know, all of the people. I think there were over 1,000 people. It was a full house just watching the film. And all through the film, I mean, it was like watching the Rocky Horror Picture Show. People were screaming and yelling. And even with the presence of all that security there, there were pro-coal representatives that had to be removed from that location. And since then, we've had other screenings in the coal fields that were canceled due to threats. I've received threats. My videographer has been arrested and has received threats. And I think, you know, unless you're down there, you don't, you know, we're losing the mountains, we're losing the water, we're losing the air of our beloved Appalachian Mountains. But we're losing the people and those communities. People cannot live there. And the ones that do live there and are speaking out about it, as happened in that public hearing in West Virginia with the Army Corps of Engineers, you know, people are literally removed by the police and are not allowed to speak, you know, publicly about this issue.
All right. I want to give Roger Horton an opportunity to respond.
I would simply say that no one should threaten anyone.
No, of course not, but she's talking about what did happen, not what should happen. Can you comment on what did happen?
No, ma'am, I was not there. But I would also like to clear up a few things. Joe Lovett made the comment that these trees would not grow. Joe, I can take you to a number of places where just in a few years we'll be harvesting hardwoods from mountaintop mining sites that we have replanted. And they're doing very well, any number of places. And the Sierra Club, let's talk about this for a second, has claimed victory on his tracker over the past 10 years on tonnage that was removed from lost coal sales in the amount of 167 million tons of coal. All right, if you do the math and then plug the numbers into your calculation, that will come back to you as lost man hours, and it will total 17,034 coal mining jobs that have been lost due to their activities. There is no wonder that people are so passionate about speaking out against anyone who would try to take away their livelihood. And it is a very passionate issue. There's no doubt about it.
Clearly passionate, Tom Hamburger.
The passion that Roger talks about is something that elected officials, party officials, and strategists from both parties and folks in the Obama White House are very much aware of. The Republican Party in 2000 decided to run a coal-fired campaign, they called it, to try to turn around West Virginia's traditional Democratic presidential vote. And they did so successfully by arguing that Al Gore, who was running for president that year, was an environmental extremist who would shut down mountaintop removal mining and threaten the livelihood of West Virginia. The effect was was an astonishing grassroots campaign, harnessing the passion that Roger is talking about and that Judy Bonds is talking about in West Virginia, harnessing the passion of those who feared economic loss. And both parties are aware of this. It's one of the reasons, I think, Diane, why the Obama administration has what seems to be a kind of ambivalent approach towards mountaintop removal.
And, Siobhan, where is this ambivalent approach likely to take us?
Well, so far, there has been no real resolution, and one has to imagine that that's what's going to continue. There will be a tough again, soft again approach coming out of the EPA and maybe also the Interior Department, which has its own hand in some of these issues.
How do you think this report to be released today might affect the debate?
I think it's exactly what Tom said, that it's really going to focus on the Obama administration mantra of putting the science first, and it's going to really give environmentalists a chance to hold the Obama's people's feet to the fire over the science.
Would you agree, Tom?
I would. I think, depending on what the report says, that's likely. And if the report were to call for something like an end to mountaintop removal mining, we'll be hearing a lot about it.
All right. Let's go to Southern West Virginia, where Bo is. Good morning to you. Bo, are you there? Okay, let's go to Wise County, Virginia. Good morning, Kathy.
Yes, my name is Kathy Selvage, and I'm from Wise County, Virginia. And I would like to draw us back, I guess, to the Center Road, and say that since we're doing so much environmental damage to the Appalachian region, to its people, and to its communities, can't we use energy efficiency, conservation measures, and green energy to supply the energy that we need? After all, we are not trying to turn anyone's lights out. And I believe in my heart that energy efficiency measures could in fact work immediately and not only save a kilowatt hour, but it might actually save a mountain. And I have one other question, and that is, if coal must remain, could we settle on a different method of extraction? I believe that Mr. Lovett has already got at that. We would increase jobs, but we would alleviate some.
All right. Let's go first to the opportunities for alternative forms of energy as well as energy reduction, Siobhan?
Energy Secretary Stephen Chu and the Obama administration are really big on energy efficiency. They would like to, and in fact have already started to implement all sorts of policies, kicking the bad stuff off the market, so to speak, so that consumers use less energy. A couple things. That takes a long time to put those policies into place. Number two, it's expensive. It costs more to buy some of these types of products.
And hasn't it been shown that some of these products are not quite as efficient as originally thought?
There have been issues raised like that. That's correct. And then if you just shift gears into getting more into renewable energy, you've got an issue of the cost of things like wind power, which is more expensive. And to top it off, coal is what's known as, to use a technical term, baseload power, meaning it operates around the clock 24/7. Wind power comes only when the wind is blowing, and you can solve that problem through battery storage, but that's expensive, and there are technological challenges and challenges with upgrading the nation's electric grid. So it's a complicated issue.
Who wants to say something?
This is Joe Lovett.
Okay, Joe.
I think we all support renewables and conservation, but that's not what we're talking about here in terms of we want mountaintop removal to come to an end and to make a short-term transition to deep mining. That will not affect the state's tax base because coal will still be mined here and the taxes will still be paid. It will just come from a less destructive form of mining.
Siobhan, you're shaking your head.
I would be curious. I don't know the figures on how much of revenue comes from surface mining, but when I looked at the Energy Information Administration data yesterday, it looked like a fair amount did
sure.
come from the surface mining. So I don't. That's a question mark, and maybe you have the answer to that.
Well, no, there's no question that I think 40% of coal mined in West Virginia is now mined from surface mining methods. I'm suggesting that we make a transition from a short-term mm-hmm. transition from surface mining back to deep mining, and we would mine as much coal because the fact is we have the power plants built that need the coal. So if we stop surface mining, that coal has to come from somewhere. And where it will come from is deep mines in Pennsylvania, Ohio, West Virginia, and Kentucky. And that's why the Obama administration needs now to tell the coal industry that it's turning the spigot off on this form of mining so that the coal industry can start to make that short-term transition to deep mining that will save our communities and our environment. And, other thing, if I can here, the EPA has been by far the best agency within the Obama administration. Lisa Jackson has, I think, really tried to help to protect the environment and to follow the science. And I see this issuance of the permit that we're talking about here today as a political decision that I think is unfortunate, but just a blip and not the real view of the EPA.
All right.
Now, within the Obama administration, the other agencies, Interior and the Army Corps, that work on this issue are not so friendly to
All
the
right.
environment.
And let me remind you, you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Now, to you, Roger Horton, what happens in West Virginia if the coal companies are denied the opportunity to continue mountaintop coal mining?
There's a significant investment in capital in our state, and that investment will go away. You know, Joe referred to deep mining increasing. It would increase somewhat, but many of the reserves that we are surface mining now have been previously deep mined, and we're extracting those reserves that would be lost forever if we did not employ this type of mining. I would also remind him, too, that the type of coal that we are mining surface mine-wise is compliance coal, and I mean by that the Clean Air Act requires this blend of coal to be used in the power plants because it's such a clean burning product. There would be a mass exodus of people from the coal fields of West Virginia if we were to lose mountaintop mining.
All right, and to you, Roger Horton, for a last word, what happens if these practices continue?
If these practices continue, we'll continue to employ people, we'll get better and better at it, and we'll be able to continue to employ our people and provide the money the state needs to run.
And to you, Joe Lovett, if they continue?
If they continue, there'll be little left of Central Appalachia, these magnificent forests and streams that are the birthplace of rivers and just the most, you know, magnificent forests in the country, I think. And I would say, if anyone really wants to get a sense of this, Mary Lynn Evans called in earlier. Her film Coal Country is a film to watch to get a sense of what's going on. And lastly, polls in West Virginia show that our citizens oppose mountaintop removal mining by a 2-to-1 margin.
All right, and we'll have to leave it there. Joe Lovett, Roger Horton, Tom Hamburger, Siobhan Hughes, and Judy Bonds, thank you all so much. And thanks for listening to all of you. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Susan Neighbors, Denise Couture, and Monique Nazareth. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dori Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org. This program comes to you from American University in Washington. This is NPR.